yeah, a few good people on both sides. I'm still going with the good people. You know, Kavanaugh's a good guy. Orrin Hatch saying, well, you know, even if he did rape her, we'd still have to find out who he's become. You know, the person that he's become all these years later. And like I said at the beginning, do we say that, you know, about the black teenager who, you know, maybe heisted a car or, you know, did something stupid as a teenager? Do we say that down the road about them? No. Or any poor kid across this country. What we're witnessing from the right wing really is wealthy white privilege. And not even just white, wealthy. This is what the wealthy get away with. Or just my thought. And here to share some thoughts on the Kavanaugh ordeal, I've asked our good friend Propane Jane to come share some thoughts as well. Jane, thanks for taking time for us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me back.
So am I on the wrong train here? Because, you know, I'm looking at Kavanaugh and I'm going, you know, what do you expect? What do you expect from this guy?
No, I'm with you. I'm with you 100%. I think this is just indicative of the attitude that we've seen and the position that the Republican Party takes, which is very anti-woman in general. And it's not even just anti-woman, it's actually abusive. And this is why just the days, you know, within days after Trump's inauguration, you had the Million Woman March. And I think that that was a very strong admission at that moment that women were really turned off by this man. And this is somebody who, you know, is grabbing by the you-know-what and is a self-proclaimed sexual predator himself. And so it's no coincidence that the people that he chooses to elevate to positions like a Supreme Court justice have that same element in their background. And that lack of character, and I think lack of judgment, in particular as it relates to women's issues and human rights issues.
Do you think it's a lack of character and a lack of judgment, or do you think it's a sense of entitlement that everything is mine for the taking? Look, I grew up with some rich kids, and I know some people who, you know, grew up with significant money, not middle class, upper middle class, I'm talking significant money, and they have a much different world view. Than I had. And in fact, you know, I've wondered, you know, for a while, you know, do we raise our kids the right way? I mean, with solid working class values and ethics and that, as opposed to the world is their oyster for the taking kind of thinking.
Yeah, I think it's both. And I think that the lack of insight and judgment comes from a very narcissistic root where that person comes first and nobody else matters. And they're just out to get what they want in a situation, and they have no empathy or sympathy for whoever's in their path. And so I do think that you see this arrogance, this sense of entitlement, you know, for lack of a better word, narcissism. I mean, that's what it is. And I think that it is particularly just running rampant right now because you have Trump at the helm, who's getting away with everything, right? I mean, he's arrogant. He's all of these same character traits that we're describing, and there are no consequences. And so he continues to just get away with what he gets away with, and therefore that builds that sense of entitlement. Well, of course I can do this. Who's going to stop me? And this is the attitude that you see being espoused by not only Trump but also the entire Republican Party. They genuinely don't care. They want this man on the Supreme Court, and it doesn't matter what happened 30 years ago. It doesn't matter what happened yesterday. All of his policy stances are anti-woman. And so I think this is just something that goes along with the overall sentiment that is coming from that wing of the political spectrum right now. It's just a lot of misogyny.
So what do you say to Orrin Hatch, who says, well, you know, if it were true, you still have to look at who he's become. You know, that was a long time ago. He's better now. What do you do with that argument?
Well, but he's not demonstrating that. Somebody who has, you know, maybe had a situation like this happen in their youth and that's actually gone forward and learned from it and changed would theoretically be able to acknowledge it on its face and say, hey, yeah, that is something that I did that was totally inappropriate, and I'm very sorry for that person. He doesn't know what has transpired in this woman's life all of those years since that happened to her. He may think of it as, oh, it wasn't that big of a deal. It didn't become this, you know, whatever the nightmare, you know, that people have in their minds conjured up. But they don't know what that was like for her individually and what it continues to be like, especially in the midst of, you know, her identity being revealed and all of that. And so the fact that he's not showing really any empathy for any of that, and just has this attitude of, I never did anything wrong. This woman doesn't know what she's talking about. I mean, you know, he's just very dismissive of the whole situation. And so I don't think that that actually demonstrates any type of growth or evolution on his part.
Yeah, I love the Orrin Hatch statement that, you know, he found Kavanaugh to be honest and straightforward, and said that there was some question on whether this woman was, quote-unquote, mixed up.
I mean, Kavanaugh has already perjured himself. I mean, can we not?
Well, of course, but I'm looking at this going, you know, I look at this because I'm focused on Hatch here, because, you know, how do you justify this? I mean, how do you, she's mixed, is this the next Anita Hill moment? Arlen Specter's long gone, but his statement's going to live on forever. The same thing here with Hatch, in my view.
Well, Hatch speaks for all of them. Hatch speaks for all of them because none of them are saying anything better than that.
Yeah.
And so this mentality, I think, again, is just that is who they are. And they really honestly don't see anything wrong with this. They don't think that the process has been sullied in any way. They don't think that he's been a poor representation, of what should be on the Supreme Court, even thus far. And he hasn't performed well in these hearings. He's come across as somebody that you can't trust. He's come across as somebody who has ulterior motives and is holding things back on purpose.
Yep.
And I think the behavior of the Republican Party in terms of, like, Chuck Grassley, I mean, he's the one that I'm really, you know, shaking my head at, because this situation with the letter and, you know, all of a sudden he has, you know, 65 women that are willing to state that he was such a great guy back in high school.
Yeah, but they weren't in that room.
They weren't in that room, number one. And how did you produce this letter within 12 hours of this being a breaking news story?
Well, you got to understand that. I'm sure Dianne Feinstein went to them over the summer and said, hey, pull this guy. Look, this is what we've got. And I'm sure they've had this for a while. The reports are they had it over the summer. I'm sure that they talked. I'm sure this was all prepared. And I'm wondering why it didn't come out in the initial initial hearings, other than, you know, this is how they wanted the game to be played.
But that's even worse, in my opinion. I mean, you know, and I totally agree with you that this is something that has been in the works. They've known this about him for months now. And they've learned absolutely no lessons from Roy Moore.
Yeah. Well, no, yeah, you're right. But, you know, because I had said last week, you know, when the anonymous letter came out, I said, I don't know about this. I don't know if I wanted to. I don't like things in anonymity. I guess it's just, you know, being, you know, a white guy, privileged, I guess, is part of that. But I want to know who it is. I want to be able to understand the story and hear the story and all of that.
Yeah.
And then as I was thinking about it, you're talking about a very small class, 66 people, 65 of which came out and said, no, he's a great guy. So it wouldn't have been very hard to figure out who this woman was after it became came out anyway. So mm-hmm. She didn't have really a choice but to come out.
Right. Yeah. But I mean, I think, you know, even over the weekend, they've gone into the letter and who actually signed it and caught up with these women. And, you know, now they're sort of like, oh, well, I don't really want to say anything. Who knows if they even knew that they were actually giving an endorsement of somebody who was due to have sexual misconduct allegations raised against him.
And it could have been some of them as well. I mean, you know, because, hey, look, you know, we were drunk. It was what it was. You know, that's always the excuse. And look, I grew up during that same era, and there was a lot of drinking going on, and there was a lot of stuff that, you know, I'm sure most people weren't proud of, which is why when this came up, you know, my thought was if Kavanaugh did it, do what Al Franken did, step in front of it, you know, be honest about it.
Yeah.
But, you know, the staking the line in the sand, I've never been there, I know, don't know. That's only going to kill him. And the good thing is I'm hoping that that we, instead of Borked, we have Kavanaugh'd. I'm looking forward to that.
I really hope so, but I think, again, it really speaks very poorly of the Republican Party that in this climate, given what is not only circling Donald Trump, but so many Republican, you know, elected officials that are actually in office now, or people that have resigned, or, you know, that's just the sentiment that is going around their party is that there is domestic abuse, and that there's sexual misconduct, and it goes all the way to the top.
Sure,
and it's at every level.
Yeah, but doesn't that come with, you know, they're the party of hyper religiosity, the party of you know, of privilege. I mean, that comes with that territory, doesn't it?
It seems to, yeah. I mean, in terms of what we see borne out in, you know, reality, but people are still voting for that, and it doesn't make good sense. That we see this over and over and over again. And I think women in particular, 53% of white women voted for Donald Trump.
Yep.
This is knowing what was in his past in regards to sexual misconduct and him being a sexual predator.
So do you think that, you know, because I said at the beginning, it'll be interesting to see come November if, you know, 70% of the women vote for Democrats, because that's where I think it should be. I know the argument is it should be 100%, but that's never going to happen. But, you know, somewhere in the 65, 70, 75% range, that seems reasonable given what they have already shown themselves to be. Because I got to think most women have had a moment where they've been uncomfortable, where something like this could have happened, or they know somebody that it's happened to and identify with it. And I can't imagine that you want that on the Supreme Court of the United States.
No, you absolutely don't. And just even the discussion around this is very triggering to women everywhere, even if they aren't necessarily politically engaged, but that's, you know, swirling around in the news. And then that immediately brings back memories of their own personal experience. And so this presidency, quote unquote, as it goes on, continues to be triggering for millions of women. And I think that, you know, I would really very much like to see those numbers improve. I really would like to see women come over to the side of, this is misogyny, this is unacceptable. Mm-hmm. But if not, I think we continue to have a Stockholm syndrome going on.
Do you find it as ironic as I do that, you know, you, this guy beat, you know, the first female candidate for president, and it's all they can do to rub it in their face, in her face and in women's faces?
Yeah, it's disgusting. And I think that women are even more enraged because she had 3 million more votes.
Yeah.
And that was us. That was women. That was us. That was us looking at the glass ceiling being broken and really working and fighting hard for her to win and seeing her win, but losing on a technicality, which is what so many of us women have gone through in our lives. And so I think that this continued assault on just our personhood and our privacy and the sanctity of our own bodies, because it's not just these, you know, allegations against Kavanaugh. It's the fact that he stands on the edge of potentially rolling back Roe v. Wade and Griswold, as we talked about last week. And these are things that matter to us in our daily lives. And when you couple those two things of getting rid of abortion, getting rid of contraception, and then you also give a free pass to abusers and sexual predators, what kind of world are you trying to set up for women? If you have daughters, is that the type of world that you want your daughters to grow up in.
Well, look, I've been saying for years, I mean, you know, the extreme right wing who seem to be running our government right now, they want, you know, gays back in the closet, blacks back in the field, and women barefoot and pregnant back in the kitchen. This plays right along with what I believe their aims are.
Yeah, I agree. And so, I mean, that's the way I think we have to discuss this, even though I think it comes across as hyperbolic and really radical to say things in this way. But this is the dystopia that we're in. We really are living these times. And we have to really discuss it on its face because that's what's at stake.
No, look, I had a couple of people email me go, you know, a couple of years ago when you were talking about the Republicans wanted, you know, Roe's one thing, but Griswold's the ultimate goal. They thought, you know, oh, we thought we were just crazy. But now we're actually seeing it come to light and holy crap, you were right. You know, what do we do? And that becomes the question. I mean, you know, out of this, you know, the last line of questioning I've got for you, out of all of this turmoil, is there a way to use this as an opportunity to grow, to heal, to change, to do things so that maybe we don't repeat this history?
Yeah, for sure. I think we have to use this moment to increase our solidarity and our fellowship with one another. And we really do have to look around and say, how can I be an ally to someone? Maybe you're a man, you know, maybe you don't have daughters or you don't necessarily have a woman in your life. But you can, you know, envision what that would be like if you can try to be mindful and have some empathy, and see how you can join together and be an ally to women. And the same thing goes with people of color, and the same thing goes with people who are immigrants who are trying to get their citizenship. And how can we use this moment where we are under attack on multiple levels? I mean, this is a culture war. So there's LGBTQ issues going on. All of us stand to be more oppressed and more marginalized if their policies come to fruition. So I think we have to look around us and kind of do some golden rule and join hands and fight back, because we all know who is doing it. We all know where the arrows are coming from.
Yeah. No, and this, again, this is why I think November 6th is so important. And, you know, I've been saying for a while, you know, the Women's March was great, but I'd like to see an even bigger march the next time as they march to the polls and throw some of these bums out.
Yeah, I agree.
It's time to clean house, I think. And look, I know Orrin Hatch isn't on the ballot, but is it wrong that I'm fixated on that? Either he's just completely tone deaf and not understanding the era we live in, or he's just an old guy who lives in the past?
Well, I think he's very symbolic of the federal government right now, you know, and who we have in office. I mean, it's 80% white male. And when you tack on rich white male, even. And I think he is really illustrative of the patriarchy and what we're fighting against. We're fighting against these people who have these old ideas that they're trying to, you know, still use in the modern day, and it's just not compatible and it's unsustainable. And the fact that they're standing in the way of our progress and us having life in a way that is more fitting and more up to date, they're just standing in the way. They're actually trying to push us backwards.
Yeah, and that's why we got to run them over. March them right on over. There you go.
Yeah, I agree.
Jane, I appreciate the time. It's always great talking with you. Thanks so much.
You're very welcome. Thank you. Have a great week.
You as well, our good friend Propane Jane. Good stuff. Let's take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.